Thank you. It should be on. Okay, great. Great to be here. Thank you for your invitation to this important series of lectures that you are conducting. It's a great pleasure to be in yet another university where the students are not just talking but also acting on behalf of the Palestinians and their rights. Every university that has an encampment is contributing significantly not only to trying and stop the genocide, but also for liberation in the longer run. So well done for anyone who is involved in it. And I'm very proud to say that also our students in Exeter are steadfast in their encampment, and it seems to be now spreading like fire all over not only the global north, but also the global south. I just got pictures from the encampment in Tokyo, in Seoul, places where usually you don't see large solidarity actions with the Palestinians. So hopefully this widespread global solidarity would make this even more effective as a tool to change the reality on the ground. A few weeks ago, I was stopped at Metro Airport in Detroit by two agents of the Homeland Security who took me aside to a room and asked me all kinds of questions, including about colonization and decolonization, which I don't think they fully understood what it meant, but they read from a paper. And I said to them, I need half an hour to explain to you, which was a mistake because, of course, it was on my time, not their time. They had a shift. They could stay till midnight, and I was tired after the flight from London. But then I said, well, I should have invited them here because here I'm going to give 30 minutes from colonization to decolonization. Maybe one of them is listening through the YouTube. If not, we'll send them the recording because I didn't fulfill my promise to them because I really wanted to get out of the airport as soon as possible. It is not easy, actually, for many people to talk about colonialism or decolonization in the 21st century. So many of us, colonialism is a period that more or less ended in the mid-20th century, with decolonization that also has already been completed. And one of the major reasons for that kind of difficulty to deal with colonialism in the 21st century is because so many of the colonialist projects that are still with us are a kind of a variety, which I'm sure you're all familiar by now with, a variety of colonialism, the settler colonialist variety, to which Zionism belongs. This is not a period in history that can end when an imperial power collapses or when colonialists are brought back home to the mother country, as happened in the case of the British and French and Belgian and Spanish and Portuguese empires. No, settler colonialism is a European phenomenon imposed on non-European countries that is still with us in different varieties. But it is a colonialist, first of all, a colonialist project. And by colonialism here we mean that Europeans, for good reasons, for bad reasons, because they were persecuted, because they were looking for opportunities, it doesn't matter what the reason right now is, for whatever reason, felt that Europe is not safe or is not welcoming them. And they were outcasts in their own eyes or by the Europeans, and they were looking for a place to recreate Europe elsewhere. Unfortunately, they usually looked for a place where someone else already lived, inhabited it. And in order to recreate the Europe that they wanted, they needed to get rid of anyone who was not a European in the process. And we know that that kind of impulse which the late Patrick Wolf used to call the logic of the elimination of the native, led to genocide in North America, Central America, South America, and in Palestine it led to the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians until recently, and now to the genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. So it is very important, I think, when we talk about colonialism or colonization in Palestine, to understand that there are layers of knowledge for people about colonialism that really regarded as a closed chapter in history. And it's not even a rejection of the idea that you can accuse Israel of colonialism or not. It might look to them anachronistic to use a term that does not fit the modern times. But I think if we insist on explaining what is so unique about settler colonialism, we may find a way to explain to people that this is an ongoing project. The same scholar I mentioned before, the late Australian scholar Patrick Wolfe, also taught us something also the late Edward Said used to say, that settler colonialism is a structure, not an event. It's something that it goes on and on until the main objective of the settler colonial project is fulfilled or until it is defeated. But if it's not fulfilled and if it's not defeated, the logic that I mentioned before of the elimination of the native is the main logic behind the actions of the settler colonial project. Whether the settler colonial project is a project of building a state or a settler colonial project is maintaining a state. Now, if we apply that to Palestine, you can easily see that many of the Jews who chose Palestine as the place in which they thought they would feel safer than they felt in Europe because of the rise of anti-Semitism, or they thought that they could be more of a normal people if they defined Judaism not as a religion but as nationalism, and for that they needed the connection to the Old Testament, the Torah, the Bible. Whatever the motive was, the objective was to create a European Western country exclusively Jewish from the very beginning. Now, unlike probably some of the settler colonial project that were 200 or 300 years earlier, we are talking about a period where already the settlers know quite a lot about the country in which they want to build the new Jewish European country. So many of them were aware, unlike some of the white settlers who came to North America, for instance, in the 16th or 17th century, they were aware that there were other people living there. In fact, they sent a lot of delegations and agents and read a lot about it, and they knew that the land was not empty. And here comes the question, if they knew that the land is not empty, why one of their most known slogan was that there were people with the land, without a land, looking for a land without people. The reason is that they needed to think, that the land was empty in order to justify a moral action on their behalf. Because if you go to an empty land and take it over, there's no moral problem there. You go to a land already populated and inhabited, where your own people tell you that there are towns and villages, people who lived there for centuries, then you have a moral issue, and you want to have a self-image of not only saving yourself, not only building a nation state, but also doing it as a moral project. That was very important to them. And in order, absurdly, two things happened. One is they had to totally dehumanize the Palestinians in order to justify the colonization. Dehumanization can either mean using scholarly help to define the Palestinians as nomads, namely people who don't really belong to Palestine, sort of moving around, so it wouldn't be a big deal if they would be moved even for the project. Well, when we know that when Zionism arrived in Palestine in the late 19th century, only 1% of the Palestinians were nomads. So this was not working that well. Dehumanization could also mean beginning this kind of an Orientalist project by explaining why these people are less attached to the land, why, because they're not European, they're not on the same level of civilization. It takes form in many ways, but what is important is to understand the origin of this, and the origin of this is exactly because we are not talking about monsters. We're not talking about evil people. They needed to make sure that what was they were going to do would be seen in European eyes as a civilized act and not as an act of barbarism or a criminal act. Because we have to remember that unlike the classical colonial projects, they didn't come to exploit the native people, which is what really characterizes colonialist, classical colonialist project. You want to exploit the people of the colony, its resources, but also its human resources to enrich the empire. No, they didn't want to exploit the people, they wanted to remove the people. They needed exclusive Jewish presence, first of all, in order to show that the project is moral. Later on, in fact, when they were beginning, when I say they, I mean the leaders of the Zionist movement, the main activists of the Zionist movement, when they begin to think about what kind of a state they would like to have towards the mid-1940s, they said, we would like very much to have a democratic state. It was very important for them. But in order to have a democratic state that fits the settler colonial project of creating a Jewish nation state, you had to make sure that in the first election for the democratic state, the vast majority, if not all the people, would be Jewish. And that was the main motive for the decision when back from probably the mid-1947, when it was clear that Britain would end its rule, its 30 years rule of Palestine, that's when the Zionist leadership began to think about massive expulsions of Palestinians, ironically, so that the first election would have only a Jewish electorate. It took them a year to plan and a year to implement. And as already was mentioned, by the end of 1948, the Zionist movement was able to expel half of Palestine's population, destroy half of Palestine's villages, 500 out of 1,000, roughly, and most of the Palestinian towns. And on the ruins of the villages, they have built Jewish settlements, or they planted trees, European trees, of course, because they wanted the European countries. So they imported pine trees from Europe and planted them on the ruins of the Palestinian villages and created recreational parks instead of the villages. And in the towns themselves, they massively destroyed Arab houses so that the Arab character of the towns will not remain and remind them of what was there before 1948. At one moment in 1949, they stopped the destruction of Arab houses in Jaffa and Haifa and Acre because they suddenly realized that it has a touristic advantage to have some of these houses for people who come as tourists. But in my own hometown, Haifa, the Israeli army demolished more than 230 houses under the order of David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, who visited Haifa and didn't like the Arab nature of the city. That, by the way, nothing unique here. Settler colonialism acts in this way. It wants to retransform the nature of the native state into its own identity. It can appropriate certain things from the native, food, folklore, clothing, words, as we've seen elsewhere, right? But not the people themselves and not the way they lived. The Israelis did not go as far as the Americans in calling the lethal weapons in the names of Native American tribes that they have genocided, Apache helicopter, or Tomahawk missiles. The Israelis did not go that far, but that is a symbolic act, of course, which is not that important. So in 1948, half of the people are expelled. Many of those who are expelled are still living on the borders of the old country, including in the Gaza Strip that was created in 1948 by Israel. There was no Gaza Strip before 1948. Gaza was a small town, very cosmopolitical, where Jews, Muslims, and Christians lived together. And because it was on the high, on the Via Maris, the road between Alexandria and Alexandretta, it was very much influenced by a lot of cultures and so on. Israel created the rectangle that you can see today, which is Gaza, because it had to push into it hundreds of thousands of Palestinians that it had expelled during the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Most of the people they expelled in the center of Palestine and the north of Palestine, they were able to force them to move outside of Israel to the West Bank in the east, or east into Syria, or in the north into Lebanon. But Egypt, as today, Egypt then, different Egypt, but with the same policy, closed its borders. It was not willing to take even one Palestinian refugee into the Sinai. You know, there is a border between Israel and Sinai. So Israel decided, in inverted commas, to give up 2% of Palestine, which is the Gaza Strip, and created it as the biggest refugee camp in the world in 1948, pushing hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees into it. But it was incomplete. Now, the ethnic cleansing was incomplete for two reasons. One, because the Israeli army was unable to expel all the Palestinians, and therefore the structure of settler colonialism continued. And secondly, because like all settler colonial movements in the world, you always want more territory, but you don't want the people on the territory. You always have these two dimensions, space and population, geography and demography. And in 1967, under circumstances which I don't have the time to go into, but Israel expanded the territory, occupying the West Bank and the Gaza Strip that it did not occupy in 1948. But if you occupy the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, you incorporate almost the same number of Palestinians at the time as you expelled. So the settler colonial practice of elimination of the native has not only to continue, it has to adapt itself all the time to changing circumstances. 1967 is not 1948. 1967, you have already television, you already have refugees that you want to expel again, and you have a very short war, 6 days war. And the Israelis, although they were thinking, contemplating whether they should repeat in 1967 in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip what they did in 48, decided against it because the world was much more attentive than in 1948 to what was going on. So if you don't expel the Palestinians, you build all kinds of methods and structures which we can see today in the West Bank in particular, to control millions of people who don't want to be controlled by you, who see themselves as the indigenous native people, and see the Israelis as occupier, colonizers, ethnic cleansers, and so on. And they fight against it, sometimes with an armed struggle, sometimes by just staying, as they call it in Arabic, sumud, sometimes by asking for an international pressure on to make Israel a pariah state. It doesn't matter. What matters is that the anti-colonialist impulse is as strong as the colonialist one. Why hasn't the anti-colonialist impulse succeed, you may ask, after so many years? Well, that has to do with the imbalance of power. The imbalance of power. You cannot compare the power of the Palestinians to the power of the Israelis, because from the very beginning, Zionism had an alliance of Christians and imperial powers and colonial powers and multinational corporation, a very powerful alliance that what whatever reason, genuine, cynical, doesn't matter, supported Israel against the Palestinians. And the Palestinians had allies, not very reliable ones, the Arab regimes. If you go into a struggle, don't rely on the Arab regimes. The Muslim world, I'm talking about the governments, not the people, were also not particularly impressive in their support. One should say the only force in history that showed some support for the Palestinians was the Soviet Union. I'm not going to idealize the Soviet Union here, but the only people who really provided weapons, training, and some support for the Palestinians was the Soviet Union, but there's no Soviet Union, and maybe it's also not the best ally in the world, so it's gone, doesn't matter. And but you cannot eliminate, really, in 21st century people, as maybe you could have in the 17th century or 18th century. So, coming to the end, I want to say something about Gaza in this connection, because we see both sides of the coin here. We see the colonization in its most brutal, there's no doubt about it. I lived through all this period, I'm 70 years old. I don't remember such level of brutality on the side of the Israelis. Nothing they did compares to what they're doing now. In every way, not just the actions themselves, but also the language that accompanies what they're doing. So on the one hand, the settler colonial project is still a structure that still continues. The indigenous people are still there. On the other hand, there is still the struggle of the indigenous people. And my feeling as an historian is that actually the decolonization of Palestine has begun at the very moment that the settler colonial project is using its worst brutal methods against it. And historically, this happened in South Africa, it happened in Algeria. There is a horrible dialectical connection between the cruelty of the settler colonial project and its shelf life. The brutality indicates that it's very close to its final days. And not necessarily only because of the Palestinian resistance and resilience. There are many other reasons why it's not working. One of them, of course, and the most important one, is that you cannot impose yourself on millions of people for more than 100 years and believe that this is somehow is going to work. That's for sure. But it's also not working because the basic idea of this settler colonial project, that Judaism is a religion, and that people can become one nation just because they used to be belonging to one religion, is not working. The secular and religious Jews in Israel have already been fighting each other before the 7th of October. They're even fighting each other now. This is implosion from within that is not going to work. You also cannot sustain something if you rely so much of one power, superpower. As strong as this superpower is, it will go through an isolationist phase, even under a Republican administration. And it's not the only power in the world anymore. And the civil societies are countering the powers of empires. Now, I'm talking here of long-term process. I'm not talking about the next, because I'm very worried that the colonization project in the next 2 years is going to be cruel, brutal, and will not only focus on the Gaza Strip, unfortunately, but will also already is moving towards the West Bank, but it will intensify the actions against the West Bank. It's very clear. But I can see the light, if you want, in the end of that tunnel. And the light for me is decolonization, but what two sentences, and with this I would end. A collapse, in a way, I see the Zionist project or the State of Israel as a building that was already built with cracks in the foundation. What the 7th of October did, it was like an earthquake. It really gave a strong blow to the foundation of the building. And therefore, the cracks have really widened. And that's why it's far shaky than it was. The only problem is that one should, not the only, one of the problems people should pay attention to, that a collapse of a project does not necessarily bring something better. Look at the collapse of Syria, of Iraq, of Libya, and Yemen. A disintegration of a nation state does not necessarily bring a better political structure, unless there's someone there to fill the void, to take over, to be ready, not when it happens, but before. And that's, of course, the huge agency we're asking from the Palestinian National Movement to get their act together, to have a democratic and united and consensual leadership. Otherwise, they would miss the historical moment of the collapse. And that can happen. That can happen. And collapse can continue and be a chaotic reality. But I'm sure, I have a lot of confidence in the young Palestinian generation that they will build the right structure to move that leadership to the future. And this is possible. And this is not just possible for Palestine. This is necessary for what we call in Arabic the Mashrek, the Eastern Mediterranean, the whole area of Lebanon. Lebanon is collapsing. Syria is already disintegrated. The Hashemites, I don't know if anybody's relative of the king here, but do tell him that this is not going to hold on for very long. And we need a political structure that would replace the Westphalian nation state that the colonialist power imposed on the Eastern Mediterranean, the Mashrek, in the end of the First World War. We will need a political structure that reflects much better the collective identities of people, their legacies, and you don't always have to buy in the Western supermarkets ideas for the future. The area itself has a great reservoir of great ideas from the past, how to build a live and let live, a coexistence that would include a Jewish group of people, but not as Zionists, and not as ruling a state, and not as a settler colonial project. Thank you.